First Pick Podcast, Picks and Perspective with Chris Johnson. Palpable.
Okay.
Hi, Mooney.
Hi, Chris.
Welcome to Players Pick Podcast. I'm so excited to have you as a guest. Thank you for taking the time.
I'm so excited too. It's not quite, I mean, you know, maybe we'll get into the origin story a little, right?
Yeah, well, I've told the story briefly a few times with other guests where I said, well, you know, it's funny. My friend Moon and I, we went to go visit Tool in the studio while they were finishing this last record. And you know, we walked out of there and you're like, you should just talk to people on a podcast and talk about picks or whatever, because it seems like it would be a cool thing that people would be interested in. And I was like, nah, I'm good. And you're like, think about it. I'm like,
well, yeah, I mean, it was hilarious because I don't play an instrument. And the minutiae of the discussion about the picks, I was like, how am I so interested in this? And I have no, shorthand with anybody. And I just was like, this is so fascinating and so fun and so niche. So I'm thrilled to be on the show, because I've just, as you know, just been your cheerleader for so long. Excited about it. So,
oh, well, thank you. And we should say that how we came to know each other was our friend Steve Vai, who said, hey, Chris, do you want to work with Moon and make her some picks for the old podcast that you had? And I think that's interesting too, because I didn't actually put those two things together as you were saying, you should have a show about picks or something. And I'm like,
well, I was totally into the artistry of the picks when I contacted you to have some picks made. And I mean, you know, art is art. And so you put at least, I don't know, a dozen of the same thing together, and a pattern, an exciting pattern emerges. And so when I was visiting the site and you were showing me samples of sacred geometry and stuff, I was like, ooh, and you know, the shiny things and the matte things and the thickness. And I was just like, this is so many fun choices. It was just like, that's how I pick canvases or paintbrushes or anything. Mm. So it was I think I just entered from another kind of point of view, and I was so excited to connect with you. And then you and I just hit it off, because I just recognized something in your voice. Like, there's a transmission of like, this is a human I should know. And then we instantly had all kinds of crazy philosophical conversations. And then you were saying you're interested in yoga. I was like, what? So I was thinking, what gods did I please?
Yeah, it's very, very similar. When I heard your voice, from the very first voicemail, I was like, it feels like we've done this before. I'm not sure what it is or how it came about, but I want to know more. And I'm so thankful for how things have evolved for us, you know, as mm-hmm. friends and the whole deal. And I also remember, I mean, like, one of the first times we ever hung out, you like took me to a dance party. And what, like, new friends, do we just go to dance parties like that? Like, is that what we do? I guess what Moon and Chris do. So
yeah, the five rhythms, that's been a movement practices are that's the fastest way I connect to my favorite part of myself. That's the fastest way I can remember that I am not just whatever my bank account or my frustrations or my driving the cat to the vet or whatever. It's there's something about the embodied piece. Oh, right. We're in a body. What can we do with this fantastic machine? I think that's a fantastic way to get to know anybody. Plus in the dance realm, well, first of all, the work was, it was a five rhythms at the time. And that's the work of Gabrielle Roth. And it's the creative process. You go through a wave where the first part of it is flowing, which is like getting a creative idea. The second part is staccato, where you zero in on exactly what you're trying to accomplish. Then chaos, when you feel like you're lost at sea, you can't see either shore, then lyrical things start to lighten up. You're like, I think I got the hang of this. And then stillness, you kind of have some kind of completion, and then the cycle begins again. And I love how the body, that practice just mirrors again the creative process. And so it's, I can't say more wonderful things about that work. And if you give yourself permission to really be embodied, then give somebody else permission. So I guess I was doing a how free is he check.
And I was like, you gonna challenge me to dance with you? Yeah. Don't threaten me with a good time. I'm down. You got a shirt I can borrow? Because I'll sweat through it. Come on, let's go. Yeah.
And then you told me you have such a history with the dance world yourself, which is so exciting.
my junior high and high school dance stuff? Yeah. I mean, that's such a fun memory. And it's strange to me that I have that memory. It feels like a different lifetime to reflect on being not a guitar player, not interested necessarily. I was in music of all kinds, but to grow up thinking about, well, and looking back going, okay, like I was really excited about MC Hammer and Vanilla Ice and like Young MC, like the 90s, like hip hop stuff that was kind of, you know, bubblegum at the time. And to do dance routines with my friends at the high school dances. And right. Yeah.
Another, goofy, thing we bonded over was Pantera.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's right. You're like, I like Pantera. I'm like, oh, really? Okay. And you're like friends with Tool. So like, I mean, I think we have to be friends. That's the way it goes.
It's so interesting. That's another thing I really love talking to people about when they talk about music, is like, what is the instrument that's your entry point? So anything that feels like the lower part of your body, anything that's like a bass or a violent drumming or anything that has that, I don't know, that round bottom feeling is so soothing to me. It's like lying down on a giant hot rock.
Well, you said you don't play an instrument, but like, I kind of disagree. You play piano and you play guitar both.
Well, let me say this. I don't let it stop me that I can't play an instrument. I'm still going to make music.
Sure.
Taking guitar lessons, and it has not been sticking, but that's fine. I just the journey of self-expression is you can't let obstacles stand in the way, little things like you can't play.
I agree. I think it's wonderful. I mean, it's part of the thing we've been talking about, like looking for instruments that non-musicians can pick up from here and there and like get jamming on. And what I notice about you is that you have such a wide artistic vision and viewpoint. I maybe because the family, partially, maybe just because the way you've seen things through your experiences. But I think that you can just apply that naturally to different things, and then all of a sudden, Moon's making art, and that's part of what I enjoy. Because I know you don't feel like you have like a technical prowess around your guitar, but you posted something the other day and it was you know, singing in French, and I thought that was amazing because you're working with what you have. And man, if the world's greatest musicians could stop, slow down, and just simplify a thing, they might find something brand new and fresh for themselves. And sometimes it's the people that don't have as much actually have more going on, because they, I only got these three things. What am I going to do with them? Oh, I'll put them in the pot and make a stew, you know, like, and you seem to be able to do that really well with multiple different elements. So
I'm definitely a big fan of start where you are and use the tools you have, for sure. And that's definitely because I'm so limited in so many arenas. So, but it is weird how I do have, still a drive to not be bothered by the obstacles. And maybe it is from the family I grew up in. I feel like the promise of my family was artistic freedom. And while I didn't necessarily feel that kind of support for my creativity, I definitely, I got a kind of a scrappy personality. So I just thought, well, I'm going to go get it anyway. That's my,
yeah,
one of my personas, my grumpy little, I don't know what that, like a bridge troll. That's like, I'm getting in there.
I spotted it early on thinking that it was an element of punk rock, you know, like it, 'cause the punk rock in its infancy, right, the players barely knew the chords, didn't have any musical theory. They just had tattered, you know, visuals, and like said, you know what, fuck the man, we're going through it. We're doing the thing. And in some ways, like, I feel you have that sense of punk rock. And it's funny that you're doing this punk rock Dharma talk now. And I was like, well, that's fitting to me because it's using the simple things and not necessarily having to be super, you know, reverent, you know, towards any one particular thing. It's going off in the direction from that place that you are today. And
I think that's true, Chris. Thanks for pointing that out. I think there's something about the momentum and then kind of seeing the effect of the momentum on yourself. So I think that's kind of one of the conversations I'm in with my creativity. It reminds me of, I started off as an actor, and because I had a lot of feelings, I cry very easily. Hmm. I can relate to people pretty, I don't know. I just can drop in. My heart is like constantly exploding. I'm touched by things all day long. But I noticed in Al Pacino's work, he's such a master. He's worked for so long that he has this way of, he'll say one line almost not like you're supposed to say it, so that the next moment is a totally authentic moment. He launches himself kind of into this, I don't know, he like puts himself in a place he just topples himself into another, into another space. So it's fun to, if you ever get a chance to watch his more recent work, you can see that, you can see him on another mastery level with himself, just kind of playing with, how do we even connect? How do I make myself seem authentic? I think it's also when you're working with somebody, maybe you have this as a musician, when you're in relation to somebody else, like if you have to do a play for a really long time, for example, the fun of it is that you are finding new ways to surprise the other person. It's about the other person. And then that surprise that you're engaging in is then being witnessed by the audience. And that's the gift for them as well. You know, you're looking for ways to surprise yourself and surprise the other person. But I get bored really easily. So this is the kind of stuff I think about.
So it almost sounds like what you're describing a little bit around Al Pacino is, there's an element of building some sort of tension and then releasing it through like kind of almost taking a different path initially to then resolve it through a more genuine feeling. Is that close?
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing I'm thinking about is it would be like, if you and I were walking down the street with or without masks, pre-COVID or after COVID, masks with COVID, whatever. And you're walking down the street and then you see, you know, like how they have like maybe some raised plant beds or something, that you have an instinct as a kid to jump up and then jump off. But as an adult, you're like, ugh, can't do that anymore. But then you're like, what if I did do it? What if I did do it with my mask and I did this thing? And then it's like you catapult yourself into I don't know, this other space. It's like, why can't I jump on the thing and then jump off? Why can't I play with myself and play in a way that's where you're even just following an instinct and going, what is that instinct even about? Like another example is I have one Instagram account that's it's so upsetting to me. And I make little videos on this one account, and somebody was like, enough, it's not funny. And I was like, I agree. It is not, but I'm not for you. I'm answering the calling that's instructing me to pursue this thing, to see what that feels like. And so in that, there's this persona I have that's, I guess she's like she's desperate for attention. I guess that's the character. That's the persona. She's past her prime, and she wants to be like a sexy lady. And so it's like, I'm uncomfortable with that aspect of myself. But I'm just like, I'm going to put it out there. I can't even explain it. How do I heal this injured part of me that, I don't want to carry any shame of any kind. So I just feel like you're only as sick as your secret. So I feel like part of the journey of art, especially the kinds of art that I pursue and that I enjoy, that I push past is what, I look for the places where I'm uncomfortable. And then I go in there and I'm like, how could I not be uncomfortable in that space? So whether that's conflict resolution with a person you're trying to be closer to, whether it's apologizing, owning a shadow part of yourself. That's some of the juicy part of living.
I really like that, actually. So now I think I understand it maybe better in that. Following the kind of almost somewhat knee jerk reactions within, kind of following them to their ends. One of our favorite philosophers, Osho, he has a whole like thing around following. I know. Wow. Country. what a wild story. But one of his things that he does, or what they still do to this day in Pune in India, one of the like things that they have you, to kind of exercise the demons or so to speak and get it out, is they do sessions of gibberish, right? They get you to like, you know, it's like blue sky writing. It's like writing and just never picking the pen up and just keep writing the stream of thought consciousness in a way. But the way I hear the way you're translating it and kind of working with that is to kind of indulge these things that come up. And you're like, oh, I should be able to play. Well, this is my life. This is my body. And it doesn't matter if I'm 5 or 55, I can jump on that planter box and jump down and have fun here and explore a different perspective.
As long as you're not encroaching on another person, and which good luck with that. Cause you invariably somebody will be offended. Somebody like, you can't be on that thing. I mean, yeah. I think I sent you the little, there's a little video of Ellen Chenoweth, who has an amazing voice, a huge talent, and she's doing the sound of a fire alarm. She's mimicking it in a lobby, and she's making the exact identical sound. She's singing along to a fire alarm, and somebody is scolding her for you know, making noise. It's hilarious. And so it's one of those examples. And another example in another simple level is like, if I feel jealousy, instead of being like, there, why do they have them? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, ooh, what? It's like a homework assignment I've given myself. How weird. I'm triggered. What's that about? And to approach it with curiosity and say, oh, I want her life. Oh, well, what part of her life do I want? Oh, I want to have 100 acres in the woods. Oh, do I really want to have 100 acres in the woods? That's a lot of, do I have to get a bulldozer too? That seems like a lot of work. I'm up for it, whatever. And then you just like, well, how could I get that bulldozer in the 100 acres in the woods? Then you set down on that new path. I love the thing you sent me today about vision and willingness. That was amazing. Mm. That was really, really fascinating.
That Sadhguru thing?
Yeah. That was really, really interesting to me.
That guy, it's weird. It's interesting to me because my initial introduction to him was like something around yoga and like real yoga versus not real yoga. And I was turned off and I was like, oh, this guy, whatever. But so many people have sent me stuff from him that I ended up subscribing to his channel. And he's had so many good conversations with people. It's irrefutable. I think he's amazing.
Anyway, we can go on a tangent about that, but something Please. Else that we were talking about that I wanted to mention too, had it and lost it, it'll come back or not.
Yeah. I think kind of following that train of thought though, with music is that.
Oh, I remembered what I wanted to say. Will you remember your thing?
Yeah.
I just wanted to vent about Osho for 5 seconds.
Yes. Do it.
So one of my main complaints about that story was they moved to this town that's a quiet, peaceful town. And then it was such noise pollution that they were inflicting on everybody with you know, operatic orgasms, like coyote orgasms to a sleepy town. That's so disrespectful. How do you coexist? How do you get to be your whole self, but coexist and not take away someone's love of nature sounds instead? Yes, it's nature too, but that's not what they signed up for. They weren't like, ooh, where's the place I can live where I'm hearing all the things I'm not having in my own life. Nobody's signing up for that. So yeah. Anyway, here's the challenges of being humans, occupying space.
One could say that they served a point of awakening for that little town.
One could say that the town served a point of awakening of like how disrespectful you're crossing a boundary. Sure.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. But both people have to wake up.
Yeah.
And then a conversation.
Oh
but
my gosh.
There wasn't and that to me was why, you know, they didn't have the reasonable side to create harmony. So then I was like, false gods.
Yeah. That whole story is interesting because, from that viewpoint, I'm definitely on the side of like, whoa, like what a trippy cult, you know, like when you see it from that lens and you see it primarily, it's like, but before I ever saw that, I didn't know, but like a tiny fraction of it. And I had just read like maybe 4 or 5 Osho's books and then kind of picked through another 10 or 15. And he's written really extensively on the human condition. So there's a part of me that has to give him some, I have to, you know, I'm like, well, let me hear it. Wow. And makes logical sense to me. But through that lens, I love seeing somebody that seems to be so educated and interesting get taken down. And whoa, they're human. They're very, very human. Right. And they are subject to succumbing to samsaric suffering as well, you know, just like the rest of us.
I always laugh, Cleo Manuelian, the wonderful yoga teacher. I always
love Cleo.
Good luck with that. Good luck, everybody.
Yeah.
She'll present like a lofty idea and then be like, and good luck with that. So
it's the best.
Yeah.
I miss her. I miss those yoga classes. what I was going to say was that the process of stepping outside of the box a bit and in music, for me anyway, has been there since the beginning. It's been because I'm almost completely intuitively propelled into the musical realm. Like I went to school, I did study, I learned to read a tiny bit, then kind of forgot it. And then, and I know just enough to kind of make my way around. But like when I pick up the instrument, I'm really like, it's really just about like, what is going to connect? What is funky? What is kind of off kilter? And then it really tries to come out when you try to play a lead line or a guitar line or something that is got that ultimate expression over the top of a theme. And where you're saying it's kind of your job to surprise the other person. And I find that to be a reoccurring fun theme, especially with guitar players, right? They're all like, oh yeah, well, I know you probably expect me to go here. You've heard it 1,000 times, but I'm going to take it in a different direction. I'm going to make it vocal this way or chunky that way. And so I can identify in that capacity.
I'm listening and I'm also going through my guitar picks right now. I'm trying to find, I have two favorites. Well, actually there's a couple favorites I have. I do love Tools. It's like that extra.
Oh yeah.
What is that one? That's like the shape of that is what?
That's they would call it a triangle or a tri. And that's Justin Chancellor, the bass player's pick.
That one is so satisfying to hold. I'm not really used to playing with them. It's a little challenging to play with picks. It's like another, turns out it's another skill set.
Sure is.
And then of course I love my picks that you made for me. Is that the gauge, the how thin it is the gauge?
Yeah. Yeah. The gauge, the thickness. I love that logo.
Yeah. What is that gauge that I'm
your, I think I did yours in 73 and maybe 73 or 60 points, 0.73 or 0.60.
It feels like it's sturdy, but not too like, it doesn't turn into a noodle. And then, yeah. And it reminds me of the thing I was using before, which was an almond. That's what I started with. I didn't have a pick. And I was like, this almond seems like the shape of a pick. It's too fat and round in its shell, but you know, I'll make it work.
How long ago did you use an almond for a pick, Moon?
That was,
tell me about that.
2 years ago when I was just starting, right around the time we met, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I've been gifted guitars, but for the first time, I bought a little tiple, which is a little 10-string thing. It looks like a ukulele. I think it's a South American instrument. And I heard that and I was like, I am supposed to play stringed instruments. And so I was really taken with that. And then my next little thing was this little tenor guitar, which is basically just a bigger kind of a ukulele that just has such a pretty sound. And then once I found a little courage with 4 strings or 10 strings that are tuned like a ukulele, then I was like, if I can do 10, I can do 4, I might be able to do regular guitar. Mm. But my hands are still too small to really get around a neck. A human neck, yes, not a guitar neck.
I think that's it's funny. There's so many people that are in the beginning stages of guitars that think that their hands are too small, but I will just point out that there are 5, 6, 7, and 8-year-old Asian girls in Japan and China that shred so hard on full scale guitars. What I think it is more so than anything is just hand strength. So finger and hand strength. So it makes the guitar feel, or the neck feel thicker or too big because it's an awkward angle. It's like, it's an guitar is a bit of an unnatural thing. Like drums, like
How do you handle doing like handstands and yoga poses when you're doing the exact opposite shape with your hands that you're doing with the guitar? Like do you do that because of that?
That's a good question. I just do a lot of wrist work and hand work for handstands anyway, but there's a lot of my warm up is flipping the hands around and getting this going on. So and this is also, you know, obviously it's one of the wrist stretches is, you know, getting this way, but it's a little more delicate, right? It's like way more delicate to have your hand bent back this way, and if you don't find the way of sitting, that, you know, proper alignment and stuff, you can mess yourself up. You can mess your neck up. You can mess your arm up, mess your shoulder up. There's all these things.
I think that's what's happening. I think I've got some neck stuff. I was like, is it too much zooming or writing? But I was like, it might be my terrible guitar posture.
It could be. It is very possible.
Don't say it's because I'm 53. Because You didn't. That's
good.
I refuse to accept the aging process. I'm just like, no, that's just a random thing from something I did, not from something that's naturally happening.
How old do you feel?
5 most days, sometimes 12 to 14. I skip around. You? Okay.
There's a certain thing about being that 16 to 17 year old that it was interesting because my stepdad always used to say, I think he was referencing a John Cougar Mellencamp songs, like saying like something where the lyrics say, you know, stay 16 as long as you can or something like that. And my dad would kind of like say, you know, kid, you're going to be old soon enough. Like, don't get into that adult stuff right now. Like, go out and go get in trouble. Not too much trouble, but go get in trouble. Like, don't try to be too good right now because you have your whole life ahead of you that you're going to have to try to be good and straight laced and do all this stuff. And so in a way, I still have a little bit of spark around that era because he said those things. And
can we just like dismantle the sentence you just said that you're going to have to be good later? What? Now we're back to jumping on the planters again and just like, what does that even mean? Be good later. What does that even mean? And the thing too about the youthful piece is, well, if you get into yoga and meditation, the observer self was fully cooked when you were a baby, and it's the same age forever, and it's timeless, it's ageless. So I think when we when I jump around, I'm like, huh, I don't feel my age. It's because I probably am resting in the observer self. That's like, huh?
Right.
It doesn't compute.
I'm so excited about, like, I mean, like, I love the discipline of being an adult. There's things obviously that come with.
It is a discipline.
it's a path. It's a path that one could take, Moon. You could take.
Maturity is a real thing that you can chronologically age and not do the maturity piece. You cannot do the actual adult piece.
Oh my God.
Of being a chronological adult.
I mean, how many people do we know that have not done it?
Total? Oh, yeah. That have not done it?
Yeah, most people. Right?
Most people. 98% of the people.
Yeah.
They just.
Well, and that's so the pressures and the squeeze of the adult world tend to be the backdrop for me, or I'm sure yourself, like kind of acting out and trying to play, going to, I mean, Kate Shella and going to the dance thing was a thing. I'm so bummed that it's not around, but it's a part of that playful aspect and remembering that when you were a kid, like you weren't so self-conscious about like, oh my gosh, what if somebody sees me? Like, especially like pre like 12, right? Like when you're before you kind of got to the space where you're like, oh, do boys, are they looking at me? Or, you know, what's the thing, right? Are girls looking at me? Okay. Before that stage where you're still just like, I don't know, I'm into this right now. And you went down that path and you would do anything that had to do with that. And you didn't, the thought of how you looked doing it or how you were perceived was so small, if barely at all. That's the state that I like to return to often. And oftentimes I can do it here in my studio. I can put on, I can turn Logic Pro on and just start making gibberish and making beats and random things. And ultimately you end up bringing it into some sort of controlled chaos, you know, and then, you know, bringing it back to the adult world, but you have the license, the ability to go off the rails and return back to that thing, dance and music, singing oftentimes are part of that for me.
So you associate that freedom to not be impacted by the external gaze, as a youthful, quality that you when you access it, it's like a return to an innocence of a time.
Yeah.
Versus, that's so interesting, because to me that is a definition of maturity. It's not in the kid box. It's in the maturity box. It's in the finally I'm a real adult that gets to play for real. Like all the pieces of yourself come forward. It's interesting.
Well, they say the child and the elder are closest to God. So, we're not elders in that sense, but like if the maturity, you know, level is there or is working at all within the adult person, I think that then you are able to turn around and access it. I think it's a similar vibe anyway for me.
I can't remember who he is right now. He was so funny. He has a joke about the elders. He was like, when they were talking about the elders lived to be 30 at that time. So the elders were 30. We've increased the lifespan.
Oh my
God. So now it's just a funny idea. And then I was thinking too about the Kronos Quartet and how they had an amazing live show that I got to see, obviously, before the pandemic, where they were talking about before the first, I think it was it Alexander Graham Bell who invented the phonograph? Who invented the phonograph? Edison? Edison? Might have been Edison.
Is it Edison?
Oh. I don't remember. The point is, before you could actually hear music played back, the musician couldn't, it was like in real time, that relationship with the note, and the listener was also experiencing it in real time. And then once the recordings of it happened, then it opens up another part of your brain. And then the ability to go back and listen to something is a totally wild idea. I don't know. I was thinking about, there's something about the Spanish Inquisition I'm trying to get to about how if you don't have that that external feedback of how you're doing, your behavior is one way, and if you do, then I don't know. It's you have to overcome something different. I guess what I'm saying is if the Spanish Inquisition happened and Instagram was around, I don't think it would have gone the way it went. My point.
Probably not.
Probably not. Probably would have been like, hey, what, maybe somebody would have been like, that's not acceptable behavior. Maybe don't do that.
Yeah.
We're watching you.
They had a hashtag that would have, you know, took them down, been canceled. Yeah, well, I think it's really interesting that the observer quality in multiple different stages, right? Because we, like, when, you know, each person to person, we're observing each other and reflecting back and giving feedback on some level about each other's behavior, you know, and that's like our first kind of point of reference in the world is like the parents and siblings and people tell you, oh, Moon, you're like this. Oh, Moon, oh, you're so cute today. Oh, blah, blah, blah. And as a kid, you're like, you continue to get these imprints about who you are. And then, and so there's a bit of a magnetic tape in us, right? That's where our trauma comes from, because thanks for telling me I was good for nothing, you know, this, whatever it was, we get this feedback and that forms that we start getting concerned about how we look and who we are and why we did a thing, because we continue to get feedback. It's like the recording, right? Now, in a musician's case, it's generally good because we want to hear ourselves. Were we in tune? Were we in time? Was it a thing? But the thing that gets lost, right, oftentimes when we're being recorded and observed and scrutinized is the natural element, right, where it doesn't matter in a live moment when you're watching an orchestra or a live musician or something like that. There's so much is forgiven. It's how did it make me feel? I'm not worried if that one person wasn't perfectly in time. It's like, did it make me feel a thing? Did it change my perspective? Ooh, okay. Well then, congratulations. It was a good show, you know? But everything now is hyper scrutinized because of all the ability to capture and play it back. And I think that that's also, you know, similar and could be shown as something that, you know, when we have a hypercritical friend, like, you know, oh, I watched the way you walked in the door the other day, you weren't feeling good. And I think that means this about you, or that means this. And we're like, oh, well, thanks for the feedback. But
okay. Can I just stop you there?
Yeah.
You know, when you have a hypercritical friend, no, I don't anymore. Those people don't belong anywhere near my world. No,
good.
That I'm not interested in a hypercritical friend anymore, ever again. I was thinking about this too. I'm working on my memoir, and I was just making a list of like all the awakenings I've ever had, which is a fun exercise for anybody to just be like, you know, all the teachers I had and the awakenings I had where I thought one way before I encountered that person. And then afterwards I thought a different way, all of the relationships I had, all of the friendships that had an impact, all the teachers, all of the beds I slept on, all the places I lived, like you, what are those awakenings? And so, one of them was, I was remembering going to hear, it started with, my acting career wasn't going well. And so I ended up pursuing art. I thought, oh, I'll be an artist. That's something else I really love doing. And the day of the opening, the gallery owner, like moments before people started to arrive, he said, oh, thanks to your last name, people will see the genius of Allison's work. And I had no idea that I was like, exactly, huh? I had no idea that I was just like the fishing thing to lure other people in because my dad's last name through my, I thought my art was good. I thought he liked my art. That's why I was part of the show. And so then I remember there was a Swami Satchitananda was in town, giving a lecture. And so I went to hear him speak and I asked him about art and about, pursuing, you know, a natural gift you've got. And he said, well, if you want to make money, people will pay for the things that they need. And I took that to mean no one needed my art. He might not have been even saying that. He might have been like, don't worry about it. Explore, find out if somebody, but it was like, it doubly reinforced I'm not an artist. And so I didn't do art really honestly until recently. But the other thing he said that I completely forgot was he took a glass of water and he held up like a kind of a, like a postcard behind it. And the image on the card warped and distorted because the water created this roundness and, you know, this altered perspective on this shape, this thing. And he said, just make sure that you're not having the reflection back in a funhouse mirror.
Hmm.
And so it's like, I focused on the first part of his sentence. You're not an artist. Talk about confirmation bias, confirming a terrible thing about myself. Hmm. When he was really saying, what's the lens you're even observing this stuff with? And I totally missed. I was like typing it going, how did I miss the other part of the sentence? You know, but this many years later, I'm like, I'm not going to miss it now. But again, going back to what you're saying about that voice, that critic is like, who is it, your voice? And if it is your voice, is there anything useful in it? I mean, I'm working so hard to get all the horrible noise out of my head so I can just be in that creative state. And I think with more maturity, then you have better tools to get that stuff gone. One of the things I get stuck in is when people are like, extend your life. I'm like, I don't want to extend my life if I have to be on the phone with AT&T for longer. But then, so I'm like, oh, okay. There's a perspective adjustment. And that's why the thing you sent today about vision and willingness, I was like, oh, okay. There's a little bit of homework around, what am I trying to accomplish? Is this, whenever he was talking about how, if you, whenever you're willing to do something, you're in heaven. And when you are unwilling to do it, you are in hell.
Mm.
And so is the thing you're unwilling to do a real thing, or is it something like you shouldn't be doing?
Right.
I don't know.
Great, great question. Great perspective. That's definitely why I sent it. It was just like, I feel like if I can shift myself towards being more being a yes to my life, what's in front of me? It doesn't mean that I don't occasionally say no to the things that are not good for me or I don't have the time for or any of those things. But if I'm primarily a yes, then as he would say, you become a volunteer, right? You're there of your own volition. You're there because you're willing and you've said yes. So, and if it's honest yes, right? That so we get into this thing in life where we're
good. Am I a good person doing good person yes?
Yeah.
Or am I doing real yes?
Yeah.
And good person yes sometimes feels like ass. Don't do that version. So I'm also looking at that. Like, is this really? Because I think I still have the good girl-itis. It's gross.
Yeah. Oh, I'm still, I catch myself in the good boy thing all the time. I'm people pleaser. People ask me to do something. I'm like, yeah. You know, I'll say yeah sometimes before I've even had the moment to let it translate through my body for a moment. And then I'm like, you know, okay, I guess I'm doing this. How can I shift it? Now that I know that I kind of did it in bad faith initially, can I shift it towards acceptance, full acceptance of, and be fully responsible for it? Or should I cancel it? Should I opt out so that I'm not involved in something that is not genuine, not in alignment? And, you know, I think that's really why we come to yoga in a lot of reasons, right? Like yoga and meditation, the breathing, the different practices is to find alignment. Because as you know, as a yogi and a teacher and a longtime meditator, that when you, it doesn't happen maybe every class, it doesn't happen maybe every, you know, when you want it to happen, but you'll find a certain sweet spot of alignment in a certain pose. Maybe it's the meditation in the middle or the end, where it doesn't feel like there's effort happening. Everything has come together. The breath is there, the body is open, the mind is relatively clear and unbothered. There, it even could have happened just for a quick moment, but it's a peek into that state, right?
Totally. Yeah, and you don't have to be a meditator or any of that stuff to even access this stuff, because it's like a really quality conversation with somebody that that it's you know, if you're following the thing that makes you feel joyful, then you're going to access it too. I think it's also setting up circumstance so that, I mean, if you're like planning a party, you know, you put out the right configuration of yummy things and maybe the seating arrangement so that people are talking to each other. Maybe it's set up in a more of a circular shape. I don't know. whatever the thing is that you're saying, just, you know what you're trying to set up and set it up so that something could happen. But also just the practice of yes and. It's like, I love long form improv or any kind of improv, and and maybe musically there, I'd love to hear about the difference between playing something and then giving that space for the improvisation. Isn't that what a solo is? A guitar solo is like the part where you do the improv part?
It tends to be, but you know, so what you're touching on is a really kind of interesting little conversation within the music community, right? Because we have so many players at this point with all the YouTube, with all the availability to study other players and their style and their techniques and watch it. Instead of just having to pick it apart by ear or have a local teacher, like for me, the example I'll use is John Petrucci of Dream Theater. He's like the godfather of shred at this point, post Eddie Van Halen and maybe Steve Vai a little bit. I mean, not necessarily post Steve Vai, but whatever. John Petrucci is noted as being one of the more perfect fucking players on the planet. When it comes down to it, he can play the same shit exactly the way he played it on the record 1,000 times over. And everybody goes, oh, like that's, oh, look at that. It's the same thing again. For me, I'm in awe of the technique and I'm like, yeah, that, but I didn't come here to hear the same shit exactly the way. Well, good job, John. Like, you're really good. Like, you're the best. And he does, it's not that he doesn't improv, but he's got such a heavy discipline and is very rigid. And so he,
Ashtanga style.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good, that's it. Right. That is exactly the mindset from a yogi standpoint, right? No, it goes like this.
And honestly, it's probably that subtle thing of what I was saying at the beginning of Al Pacino. It's at a certain point, he's probably in a deep nuanced state with himself, because he might just like let a note drag a tiny bit. Like he might be in, I don't know. I don't know his work to know, but I wonder if he's, what he's doing to keep it alive for him. Or maybe it's just, he loves hitting the mark. Like that's so satisfying to hit that thing, to stick the landing every time. And to go for that kind of precision is there's maybe a joy in that too.
Yeah. I mean, I think it is similar. It's like you take, you know, Bikram and Ashtanga, and the things that people love about them is that it's the same shit every time. They can kind of turn off a certain part of themselves and try to stick the landing and measure up each time from previous times. Right. And I'm not anti that, but the other side of it would be, you know, somebody like, hey, let's just hang out and trade fours. Like you throw a solo down, I'll cut a question and response type of thing. And let's just see what happens. And it's so wide open. We're in the key of A tonight. All right, let's go. You know, and it's not rigid. We're exploring, we're listening. We're wondering what the breath is like in the room tonight versus saying, oh, every night, this song at this time, this thing happens. Right? Like we're not doing that. We're saying, well, I wonder what else is possible tonight in the key of A. We're not even saying what mode. We're just in this space. And interestingly enough, your dad, Frank, had a really interesting, you know, combination of the two. He was very rigid in a lot of ways. Very rigid. It was like, it happens like this at 3:49. The thing happens. But then he held space for the improv. And that's what, the more I learn about him and the way he liked to conduct himself and the way he wanted to make sure there was space for the individual members of the band to express themselves. Ooh, I feel very fortunate to be learning that lesson in that way, because I'm like, oh, okay. So there was as much as he was imbalanced in other ways, he had this strange balance here where he was like, no, it's my freaking show. It's my thing. This is how it's done. but now it's your turn, go for it. And you're like, oh, it's not the same as it was last night. It's not the mm-hmm. same as it was three nights ago. You know, there was space for individual expression amongst the rigidity and the timeliness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of a jazz musician approach in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm remembering, and I'm sure I have it completely wrong. I think I read something somewhere about Oprah Winfrey saying, and this is like a cousin of this conversation, but like she was talking about how if somebody catches her, you know, squatting in the bushes to take a shit, I'm sure that wasn't the quote, but something, it was something like, if you great catch visual. Me doing the thing that I'm doing, that I need to do for myself, that's on you. And, and that, again, that was like one of the first times I was like, wow, if Oprah is like, I'm doing my thing. That's such an interesting, I don't know, it had a certain quality to it. And so thinking about how my entry point is all of those disciplines at once. It feels like a giant fire hose of all those different ways to work. And I think I'm just trying to tease each thing out and work a little bit at the, I mean, I think I'm drawn to that idea of discipline. I think it would probably serve me well to be more like just A's this week, just that note. We're just going to play with that thing. Or there is something to that that's appealing and also nauseating. I mean, all of it is. I could talk myself in or out of absolutely anything.
Oh yeah. I mean, because I'm a little loosey-goosey and I let myself get away with a lot of shit, when I see somebody that has a discipline and a practice that is just next level, I'm like, I don't care if it's with guitar or yoga or anything, especially things that I don't know anything about. It just becomes magic to me. I love
like who's that right now?
In yoga, it would be, there's Dylan Werner, which is absolutely insane. But Roy Gold. I just got turned on to Roy Gold. He's in Israel. He's part of the Israeli movement thing. He's like probably like 6'10" or something like that. Physique. I mean, like if I was a gay dude, I would be super. Not being a gay dude, he is magnificent. What an incredible physique. I can't even believe it. Like if I were to dream up my own comic book character physique for myself, I would choose what Roy Gold has. He is phenomenal. Like he has taken, he's obviously got a very high level practice, but he's into that kind of free form animalistic movement. And he has mixed it kind of with breakdancing and one-handed handstands and all these different things. Like I pass it along to other yogis. They're like, is this breakdancing? Is this yoga? Is this dancing? I'm not sure what this is. And I'm like, that's what I'm talking about. It's not any one of those things exactly, but there's high level of skill in all of it. And he makes it look magical to me. Like, I mean, it's very, wow. I'm like, ooh, what are you... Sign me up. I don't think I'll be able to do it, but I would, I'm in awe of it.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah.
How about music right now? What's doing that for you? Are you just experimenting with your own stuff and kind of giving yourself permission?
Well, as you know, I mean, I've been working through a bit of a hip hop project, which is strangely old territory, but new territory at the same time. It's kind of in strange way, it is my memoir. I'm actually like, strangely going through and trying to make the lyrics somehow tie in memoir-ish like to my personal events in life. But as far as what I've been listening to, I mean, I haven't stopped listening to Krungbin. And I think I passed them to you and you were like,
great.
Didn't listen to them at first because thought they were metal or something.
I was like, I can't do anything raucous right now. And then I was like, this is like super mellow. What? Yeah. Why? And their look is so not super mellow. So I was so tricked.
Yeah. They got a 70s mod, almost metal looking thing to them. I don't know.
Yeah. I thought it was going to be speed metal, like crazy, crazy, crazy beyond, I can't even think of that one band right now. I don't know. Like Insane Clown Posse. Not really, but I don't know what I thought it was going to be, but it was not what I thought. I'm enjoying them. Yeah.
it's funny. When I brought them up to Dweezil, he was like, he kind of like was bummed about it he's like, those guys, how are they so big? I mean, people have been doing this for so long, but like they come along and do it and now everybody's paying attention. And I'm like, I know it's a weird anomaly, but they touched on it in a way that is appealing to a wide audience, you know?
When the thing descends on someone, you just never can predict it. It's very strange, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
And I think we're also touching on another cousin to this conversation is the remembering, like, so there, you know, people, we get inducted into a path, like we'll say, oh, you know, so-and-so their lineage is this, and I'm going to go study with them. Could be music, could be yoga, whatever. Right. And then when we get into that path, we start to, even if it's mostly good, we'll nitpick something out of like, oh, but here's where it falls short. Oh, you know, even if we don't ever become masters, like the analytical, I'm not going to find mastery in that because these things don't appeal to me, or I don't want to push it to that level. And then I'm remembering like the advice of Bruce Lee when he says, you know, like he made up his own martial art. He studied 5 different things, became proficient in a lot of it, and said, oh, you know, I'm going to get rid of the things that don't mean anything to me, and I'm only going to keep what I want. He was very unabashed about it. And that's what I love about this guy, Roy Gold. That's what I love about my favorite hip hop, my favorite metal, is they go, oh, no. Okay, we're really influenced by these things, and these are the things I'm going to keep. The rest can go, you know, by the wayside. I'm not worried about it. I don't need to be allegiant to some sort of thing that everybody claims. That's why Ashtanga and Bikram and that stuff, like, well, no, it's done like this. I'm like, oh, you make me want to throw up the moment you say that. Even though I hear you and I agree that that's good for you, I'll be over here doing my own thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a live stage show about Maria Callas's life. I think it was just based on that idea of an opera singer and a student, and the student surpassing the teacher, and that the pain of that, and also the necessity of that, because I mean that's how we learn from each other and grow and create the next thing that inspires the next person to dethrone you in a way. And I think if we didn't think about it as if we didn't add good or bad to that process, then it's you know, it just is what it is. There's something else you were talking about that was making me think about a few other ideas. Oh, I was thinking about like when people do their first album and how we love the first album so much. It's almost like what we're loving is like when someone, it's like we got to lose our virginity well with that experience. And then the next time we're like, the sophomore album, we're like, it's not giving the new feeling, but it's giving me the deeper feeling. So if you stay with it and then you stay with something, I don't know. I was just thinking about how when you were saying that guitar player keeps playing the thing that's the hit, that first, and probably it is a dopamine hit, but just that idea of you know, the maturity, growing the ability to deepen that connection, deepen intimacy. Not everybody's interested in that, but I wonder if they're not interested in it because they haven't given themselves the chance to explore it and make it, I don't know, exciting. Do we have to see an exciting version of it and then we jump in ourselves? Maybe, I don't know. I don't know. I just think about connection and intimacy, obviously, with it. If everybody really just wanted to do their own thing, everybody would be grateful for COVID. They'd be like, oh, I love being in my box and seeing no one. but I think we're learning. Oh wait, maybe we should be connecting more deeply. And then it's like, well, how can we connect deeply with given the parameters? And then it's like, I swear, I feel like we're like earning back the privilege of connection.
Ooh. I think you're right. I'll admit that there's a part of me that is super okay with being left the fuck alone predominantly. but I'm not. I'm alone physically mostly, but you know, work and everything else doesn't necessarily leave you alone. But there is an element there that is enticing. And I think I actually been noticing that I might need to find my way out of it a little bit, because there's a part
new,
of me that's new like
habit.
Yeah, new habit. I'm like, no.
Ninety days, right? You form a new habit, 90 days.
Oh my God, it's only been 10 months. So the undoing that's needed now to come back to be more regular. It's like people invite. I mean, we're still not in a safe place, and that's part of it. It's part of it. It's like I'm apprehensive to go out and find more physical friendship, you know, intimacy or anything like that. Unless it's out riding bikes or doing something, you know, that's that we can be a little distant.
No, it's going to be like the 1800s where you have to literally, you commit to somebody and you keep yourself safe so that you can get to know that person.
Right.
It's so old fashioned, old school.
Are we going to go back to arranged marriages, arranged relationships?
I hope not.
Well, this is who the universe has selected for you, Moon. You got to hunker down and hang out. Good luck with that.
Yeah, there is a great show. I think it's on Showtime. It's called Soulmates, and it's they explore that idea.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a great show. There's a way to find out who your soulmate is, and would you take that chance if you were already married, for example, or if you they play with so many fun messed up scenarios about exploring that. It's really fun.
That is interesting. It's on Showtime, you said?
I think it's Showtime. Soulmates.
Okay.
It's like sci-fi-ish fun.
Yeah, there's been a few flicks out there that addressed interesting things like that through the years. What my favorite probably is, I can't remember the episode or anything, but Rick and Morty had there's a point where the grandfather tells the dumb dad, don't hang out with this alien because he just wants to make an app. The app is going to be detrimental to the universe. Don't make an app. He like tattoos on his forehead, do not make an app with me. But this alien is living with them. It's a cartoon, right? So, and the dumb dad makes this app, and it's this amazing app where it shows you the soulmate and it like links you with people. But it tears apart the fabric of all the families because everybody's linking up. And then, you know, it's not as good when I tell the story. You have to watch the episode. But
my fear would be I match with no one except myself. That's my nightmare.
What does the Buddha say? It says if, you know, better to walk alone than walk with a fool, you know, something like that.
If you're the fool?
Oh, then
don't
good luck with that. I know. Well, I mean, so much of the sacred life or the spiritual path, it a lot of it points towards learning to be alone, right? Learning to be okay with it, finding out who you are, right? Getting reflected back through the relationships and all this stuff, but learning to find some sort of comfort in knowing that we come here, even though we have people around us, we come here alone, we leave alone on some level. That path is, and as I sent to you that Chogyam thing, like, you know, the spiritual path is not fun. Better to not begin. Because if you do, then you should go all the way.
Might as well finish it.
Might as well get.
Yeah, I'm more and more. It's like I again go to the origin. Where? What country are they from? What's the culture? What's the cultural message? Like, I was listening to some podcast about happiness, and then I was like, wait a second, this guy is Canadian. They've got national health care, and they've got transportation. Mm. These same rules do not apply for Americans. It just doesn't. We'll get as happy as we can, but we can't get that happy as Canadians or countries that have healthcare and transportation. We just can't. Mm. We have a totally different nervous system that's always going to be grabbier because of it.
Because you make a really good point.
It's frustrating. And so then the same kind of thing with the spiritual communities that come from you know, the countries that believe in reincarnation, yeah, they're going to be like, it doesn't matter. Just chill. Because they've got another nervous system that's like, we're just basically stream hopping from the left to the right of this little stream here.
Mm.
And so I don't know. Can you adopt that?
Yeah, I was going to say, I wonder, that's a good, such a good point to bring up, because I wonder if a Western person that has been more like, oh, you're dead. You're not like, you're going to hell or you're going to heaven. Like, it's been mostly Christian or Judeo, you know, influenced. Cause I'm asking that out loud for myself in this moment with you. Because I've been kind of asking that for years now, like, can I let go of these, this programming and kind of stream hop with these reincarnation, folks, or am I kind of doomed to like be clenched around this other thing? That's also part of why I went back, and I'm always interested in people disproving, even though I'm very kind towards Christianity. I do my best, but oh boy, there's been some people that have done some research. And I'm,
well, the thing about skepticism is at the end of skepticism, I have to believe that we want to trust. I want to believe the whole thing, but I see the loopholes and I won't be able to calm down if that loophole exists. I won't be able to accept the whole thing in. I can't,
right.
It's not going to, the whole piece won't fit. So, you know, then you are cherry picking, and that's a style. That's fine. The most exciting thing I heard recently was Taylor Mack did a Christmas show. Taylor Mack won the MacArthur Genius Grant for a 24-hour show about the American Songbook. Taylor Mack performs in drag, and this Christmas show, she was honoring her mentor or mentor of hers, called I think it was Mother Flawless Sabrina, and Taylor was quoting Mother Flawless Sabrina, and the quote was, "Reality is just a mass hunch," and I found that incredibly liberating. And then basically the prince presented the idea of championing art is an act of civics, and so the show was like, and I've got that quote wrong, but the show was all about Taylor giving her friends permission to fill these little 5 and 7 minute parts of the show any way they wanted to creatively, and so you could say it was not good viewing, or you could say it was fantastic. I felt like I was back home watching the way my dad would work with people, because it was the permission granted to just say, how do you want to fill this space? How do you want to fill this time? It was almost, the work was almost irrelevant. It was more fascinating to watch, how did that human choose to fill that human space? I found that really, really, like, I'm getting emotional about it. It was incredibly uplifting to me. Just that kind of generosity to say, this is, what if you just had, you know, you just, again, you're just in the experience of it. It's a totally experiential feeling, embodied experience. One of the people was a Christmas tree interacting with other trees. And I was like, I want to be a Christmas tree. And it was just the most amazing Christmas tree costume.
And Christmas trees smell good.
Yeah, they do.
I mean, come on.
They really do.
Ugh.
have we covered it all?
Almost, yeah. I was just gonna, like, a moment ago, I love that, because I think we're back on having the space held for personal expression, for what's your deal right now, what's your deal when I put you in this space with these hors d'oeuvres present and these lights on and these smells, what do you got for me?
Well, and then going back to the thing you sent, when you have a vision, then whatever is laid before one, the vision will drive those choices. The greater vision will play a part in making the choices about how you're interacting with those things, which I find really fascinating. So some people don't plan for the future and they just like, whatever's in the lobster net. But if you have a vision for, I want everyone to open up their lobster net, then how I interact with those things on the table is going to be altered, because I'm going to probably come up with ways you and I can work with the things that are laid out before us versus how am I going to work with these things? It's just, again, living more intentionally, which is also available in the adult gift box that you can subscribe to here.
smash that subscribe button. Yeah, you definitely could go down that route. I'd like the feel, it's more of a mature thing to be able to like, or the concept of dedicated, deliberate action. My friend Vladi brought that to me years ago, and she's like, this is what's sacred to me, and this is how I'm moving towards sacred space, is what am I dedicated to, and how am I being deliberate in bringing that action forward? And, you know, the space changes how that works, but if you have that vision, and I'm slowly, you know, I'm coming around to it more and more. I haven't done it. The first time I really like actualized it was with the band years ago, and it was so tough to get everybody to know what we were doing, you know. But now when you're on your own and you got your own project and you set the scene, it's a different thing. Now you're like, oh, I could do anything. Shit, I don't know if I want to do anything. You know, and then you have to go back and forth until you find, well, what is it that I want to do? Because I found that in the band, I was kind of like just riffing off of other people's ideas. I had some of my own, but it was almost easier to have a few things to bounce off, and you'd get moving even if it was tough to finish the thing.
Well, sometimes you need to borrow somebody else's faith or their style of doing things or whatever to find your thing. Like you try it on. Is this me too? Do I have this overlap here? I think that's fine.
Borrowing someone's faith. That's what you said, right?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. I think I've borrowed like, firstly, my grandmother's faith from early on, you know, like her faith in God, her faith in whatever. And that's interesting.
Probably her faith in you. I mean, that's so important that somebody mirrors some part of you that they say, I love you just as you are, no matter what. And I think you like when they hold a vision for you that you can go farther than you even think you can go for yourself.
Yes.
Vision again.
Yes. And okay. So let's full circle this. Thank you, Moon, for holding a vision for me multiple different times. And one of them being this show, this podcast. And in the yoga realm, like you've taken a few of my classes and you had initial, like immediate feedback. You held vision for me in that way. And I think you just put the finger on the thing that it is. One of the reasons why I'm so like forever in love with you, like I'll always be in love. I'll always love you forever and ever, no matter what, because of that, your insight and how you have shown down into me, into my person. And like, you just had, I don't know. I think you're so profound in this way. And I have like a bunch of gratitude for that in our relationship. So I just want to say thanks. And that I think that you just hit a little thread for me.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris. That's opening my heart, bringing tears to my eyes. I really appreciate it. I love you very much.
I love you too, Mooney. Well, this, you said 90 minutes felt horrible, but it could feel horrible, but we're coming around to it. So I guess, if you want to throw out any musical or any suggestions of things that we should check out, I want to say for people listening out there that Moon is an awesome yoga teacher and awesome Dharma talk person. She's been doing this thing through Yoga World Heart on Tuesday nights at 7:30, where you can drop in and chat with Moon, and she has a different subject or a different approach to the talk each night, right? And and there's other amazing people that show up, like Niche.
He does a great philosophy talk on the site as well. I mean, sometimes it's a slideshow. Sometimes, I mean, I always say that there's medicine somewhere and it might be you that's bringing it. So, because that's what happens, I think, in a conversation, in an interaction that's really, when you try to like clear all the, whatever, the noise out of the way and try to just, you know, speak from your essential self. That's really, I think the fun of that, that's the invitation anyway. And then the only other thing I was going to mention is, yeah, musically, I'm obsessed still with the Fiona Apple, her last album. That is just saving my life right now. Aldous Harding, she's also saving my life right now. I can't think of the guy. I got to find his name. Oh, shoot. I don't remember him. Maybe I'll send it to you and you can post it somewhere. There's another guy whose album is really, it's on repeat all day long. But as far as music goes right now, it is fun to listen to new stuff and get inspired by it. I mean, I love contemporary stuff too, because it's like I want to hear from the people that are translating, transmogrifying, titrating this, what we're going through right now. I'm really fascinated by the current conversation. I mean, obviously it's nice to listen to stuff that's like soothing, that gives you the feels from before, that's cozy, but I'm definitely craving any conversation around how to make sense of the world we're in right now and just being with it. So in all forms, podcasts, The Confessional, Nadia Boltz-Weber, her podcast. Brett Goldstein does a podcast called Films to Be Buried With. He cannot do small talk. It's fantastic. And he's funny as hell. So that's a great one too.
Cool. Great recommendations. I do love The Confessional, since you turned me on to that. She is incredible. She's an interesting character. Like the more I look into her, I'm like, oh, she's superhuman, but also like super into what she's doing. And I just like, I'm into that. Like, I love seeing the paradox around people. Like, I'll give you, for example, like I'm definitely a yogi, peaceful, loving person who just purchased a gun. Like, I don't, that's weird to me. That's a whole nother podcast,
I'm assuming you got a license as well.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't buy it off the
street. Wasn't a street gun.
Not a street gun. And it's just like, it's been on my list of things like, I should learn how to shoot, and I should just learn. I should just learn more about it. And it got invigorated by meeting this Trumper guy that I went to go look at the space that like could be a yoga studio. And the owner was this super cool, like 70s, in his 70s. And he's been around here forever. And man, he was really smart and really cool, but also very, very Trumpian and I was like, okay, how come I'm not completely repulsed? Cause he was super intelligent and he had a lot of really great things to say. I didn't agree with all of them, but like, it just drew me in. Anyway, I love the paradox. I love the contrast between.
Were you able to share with him where you disagreed, or did you not let yourself say stuff out loud? Or did you just like listen and say, I don't agree with that? Or did you actually verbalize, oh, I don't agree with that? I'm just curious.
Didn't verbalize it. Didn't verbalize it at all. I realized that, I came there to look at a space. We went and looked at the space. It's really cool. It's it's not anything that's going to happen right now, but, I quickly realized that I wasn't there for that. I was there to listen to this guy. And cause he's an old school guy from this area. He remembers when there was a train going downtown and all these different things about Chico and about the area I'm in that like, I was like, oh, I didn't know that about that. And his mom had helped run the
spinoff Republican podcast, Chico.
Yeah, just Chico.
I heart Chico.
Dude, I could totally do that. I was super into
good.
It. Yeah.
I know you could.
But his mom helped run the National Republican Committee or something for years when he was young. And he was like, when Reagan was nominated for president both times, he was at the dinner, like, sitting there. He knows Newt Gingrich and all that. Random, like lots of people that are, you know, somebody in that realm. And so I just found myself going, cool. We talked about 20 minutes about the space and then an hour about everything else. And I just was like, I was enamored with him in a strange way. And
well,
so
make sure you share who you are so he can decide if he's enamored with you too.
Oh, right. No, I will. I will. Eventually I will. If we become more than just passing friends, but it was very, very interesting dude. And he's the one who recommended me. He's like, oh, if you want to get a gun and go do some training, like you can go talk to these guys. And so yeah. I walked over there and was like, hey,
I admire your willingness to have a reasonable, open hearted, conversation, making space for, somebody whose ideas differ from your own.
Thanks.
Good
yeah.
for you.
I'm trying. I was unexpected because my initial reaction was like, oh, okay, you should just get out of here. Just cut this conversation and get out.
But, oh, boy.
Anyway, thank you so much for your time, Mooney.
Yeah, and thank you.
I hope you have the best rest of your day ever.
You too.
And
this is really
touch.
Fun. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Love you, honey.
Love you. Talk to you soon. Bye.
See you later.